everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. And today's theme is carried over from last week. I did something that I felt was necessary for all of us, and that is, when I look around Europe, in France, in Great Britain, Ireland, Spain, I'm seeing people go to the streets by the hundreds of thousands, cumulatively by the millions, to protest various aspects of the COVID protocols that have been implemented or demanded. And yet in the United States, you're lucky to get 200 or 300 people coming out to protest. The question is why? And I believe that part of it, just part, has to do with we're not in enough pain. I've spent my entire career trying to help people to change, to get them as healthy as possible, to prevent or overcome their diseases. There's been some success, but more often than not, people fight it. They're into their comforts. They're into their comfort foods or behaviors, patterns of behavior that can frequently lead to premature death. Happened in my own family. Mother, father, brother, aunts and uncles all died. They all smoked. They all drank. They all ate bad food. They didn't exercise. And so they felt that they'd lived a long life if they lived into their 50s. My mother died at 58. My father, 58, just 2 years apart. It was considered exceptional for someone to live to be 70 and they had multiple diseases if they did. Well, that's not uncommon today also. We're actually losing on the life expectancy. But we're also losing the battle for our country, our rights. We're not treated as sovereign, sacred individuals. I'm concerned about it. And I know many of you are as well. So maybe it is time for us to take control. But how do we do that? If others have been in control, everyone else was the expert in our life. Everyone told us what to do, where to live, where to put our money, how to invest. Now it's time that we took back that power. Hence the program you're about to see, part two of Be a Rebel. All right, it's time. Break the rules and be a rebel for a change, part two. And part one, you can go to the archives on prn.fm and download, and you'll see it. Also coming up to help everyone, because boy, are people in crisis. We are receiving dozens of calls per day, and people asking, well, what if I don't want to get the vaccine, and I'm going to lose my job? Can't do that, and my kid can't go back to school unless they're vaccinated. We're getting it from all walks of life. Now military are going to have to be vaccinated, all the people in the military. And they're freaking out because they've seen the harm of the previous vaccines, the experimental botulism and anthrax vaccines, and how they ended up with Gulf War syndrome without even going to the Gulf War to fight. The vaccines did it. The government denied responsibility, just like they denied responsibility for Agent Orange and all the injuries that occurred in diseases from people who served in Vietnam. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to do a webinar on the following date. It's coming right up and it's coming soon. It's going to be on Sunday, August 22nd at noon. Again, Sunday, August 22nd at noon. Go to GaryKnoll.com for more information. But I'm going to do the following. I don't know how many hours it's going to take me. 3, 4, 5. You can either call in and listen or you can watch. It'll be a Zoom. I'm going to bring on the lawyers, constitutional lawyers, showing what your rights are. Letters that you can send that will be written by these lawyers I'm going to have. So, and they're going to be in a part of the script, so you can download them as you're going through the day. So you can write back, whether it's about an employer or whether it's about a school or university, you'll have rights. So we're going to have several lawyers on. I'm going to find the best doctors to bring on who have gotten the most success from their protocols for COVID. And so you'll have that. We're also going to look at the best places in America to live where your rights are respected. And that's not New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Vermont, Virginia, District of Columbia, Illinois, California, Washington, or Portland, or Oregon. No. There are much better places. quality of life, be around more progressive people. So we're going to show you the best places to live as far as your rights and sovereignty, the best places to live, the top 10 places and the top worst 10 places to live as far as health, job opportunities, better schools, and also environmental concerns. Which are the most sustainable places? These are all new charts and information. We're going to share how to build your immune system naturally. We're going to give you protocols. All that's going to be covered and a lot more, plus we'll be answering your questions. So a lot of your angst and concern will be dealt with. Now we're going to go to how we can evolve that spirit to defy what is not real and important to us, to push back against the authority that is occurring now.
We have to have something that is more natural. I'd like to see people let their hair grow, bankers in particular. I mean, not everyone should look like Oliver North. You start to act like Oliver North or Pat Buchanan. Okay? So it's all right to let it flow. But in our society, people get a haircut. Get a haircut. Faggot, get a haircut. Commie, lefty, remember all those things? They'd yell at you. Fear over hair. Now, isn't it stupid to fear hair? Right? Well, next time you look in the mirror and you look at your hair, ask yourself, what would happen if you really let it grow? Don't tell me you did that when you were 18. Everybody did everything at 18. You know, well, we did that in the 60s, Gary. Yeah, but you ain't in the 60s now, are you? And you're not 18 now. Let it happen now and see what happens. Right? Because when you wake up in the morning and you look in the mirror, you should see the ideal self. And you should always keep a vision, no matter what you physically look like in that moment. You should look in the mirror and see what you ideally want to look like. You should always keep looking at the ideal. You don't see the fat, you see the trim body, you see the ripples on the belly, you see the tightness in the legs, you see the strength in the arms. You see someone who could go out and do a marathon or do a mountain climb, who could go roller skating or who could do snorkeling. Whatever you want to do, you've got the body to do it. And you're not going to be ashamed of it. And there's the way you do that is integrating all the positives. And then in 6 months to a year, you got that body. Hey, if you really want to be young, you really want to be healthy, you really want to be dynamic, you got to work on it. It's not going to come natural. All right? Ask some of the people that we've put through some real hard training who wanted to be top athletes. And ask them how it felt when they went from being a slow runner to a fast runner. And the difference was what they were willing to commit themselves to. Every one of them got faster. Jay, how fast did you get? A lot faster, right? Do you remember the pain you went through? Yeah. But now you don't go through that pain. Now when you're getting on a treadmill, we put it up to the highest elevation, we say, all right, let's pump out that, you do it. You didn't think you could do that originally, did you? You wanted to be a banker just like him, be honest. And you thought by cutting it real short? And think of all the people in your family around you who are unhealthy, who would start to kid you, who would make fun of you, who would try to hold you back. You ever have that happen? Any of you in this room ever have people try to hold you back for being healthy? How'd they try to do it?
At first this was, why aren't you eating with the rest of us? I cooked this for you. Why aren't you eating it? Mm-hmm. And that's when I started being a vegetarian.
Okay. Did you explain to them that you wanted a different way of eating?
Yes.
But they were afraid of that?
Yeah.
Were they angry at you?
Yes, when I refused.
Okay. Did you kill them? In New York, it's justifiable homicide for vegetarians. Remember, only meat eaters eat their young, not vegetarians. And others, yes.
They just say you're weird.
Well, do you think they're right? Good. All right. What's wrong with being different?
They've always thought I should give my meat to the dog.
You gave your meat to the dog?
Yeah. because I didn't want to eat it, and I thought it was black from them, so.
All right. How old are you? Okay. Now, could you imagine how many people are 32 who have a body that's 52 because they were eating that meat and creating toxins, more likely to have breast cancer because of the estrogens that were precipitated in the meat, and you don't because you were conscientious. So now, everything is coming around to you being not so weird. You were right.
Now
they're falling apart and getting sick. You're not. That's the courage it takes to be the rebel. So you were a rebel, you see? Who else? Yes.
Well, I don't work. My husband does all the shopping. Mm-hmm. So he says, the vegetarian food is too expensive. And I said, well, look, why would you want to pay for it at the end, meaning that they're in the hospital paying doctor bills instead of being healthy now and paying the money in advance?
Okay. Why don't you take your husband shopping, let him buy all the food he would normally eat, right? Then you go shopping and buy vegetarian food, and I'll bet that it's one half the price. Because a pound of grains is one fifth the price of a pound of meat. And a pound of potatoes is one seventh the price of a pound of potato chips. All right? And a box of herbal tea to make one tea bag is 3 cents. How much is a cola?
$1 something.
Okay? So which is more expensive?
His way.
His way.
Yeah.
But if you showed him that it's actually cheaper to be a vegetarian in shopping, and if you're absolutely right. Think of the bills. Are you all have full health insurance coverage?
Yeah.
Okay, you're lucky. Most people don't. So if they got sick, they're going to have to go bankrupt paying for their health. Your security. Now, your creative self. When was the last time you were absolutely creative? This morning? Huh? Good. Every day? Great. For those of you, I'm specific talking to you, the banker. Every day you should be creative. Every day there's a natural, innate desire to create. And we should constantly put our mind onto what we can do that manifests creating. Now it's to your imagination what you want to create. You can create in any part of your life. You can even create original recipes. You can create different ways of living, different lifestyles. But do something creative every day, not just occasionally. And it's one thing to appreciate and support other creative people, and therefore to live through other people's creating, like going to the arts. I know a lot of people, they'll go to the arts, but they're not themselves creative. It's more significant to do creating yourself and to participate in respecting other people as well. Don't be a passive creative person. Your security. How much security do you need in order to be happy? What's the basis of security? What constitutes security?
Fear.
So what creates fear?
Giving up what you have.
Giving up what you have. So how important is it to give up what you had if what you had is not everything that you desire or want?
I'm struggling with that right now.
Is it a struggle against giving up, or is it a struggle against what is unknown in what you might take its place
unknown.
With? So you're really fearful of the unknown.
Yes.
Because we weren't conditioned to accept the unknown. Right?
All my life I was conditioned not to work on my own, and this is what I'm doing.
Okay, so now you're trying to do something on your own, not knowing what's going to happen, whether you're going to be successful or not. And there was always that constant reminder that if you do something on your own, you're going to fail.
Yeah.
So therefore, your fear of being wrong and proving them right is more important than you being completely who you are and simply accepting that there is no such thing in a rebel-free mind as failure. It's only a learning experience.
I don't care about the others anymore. I just care about what I feel and how I feel.
Then where's the purpose of the fear?
I'm getting rid of it.
Getting rid of it?
Getting rid of it
is an excuse.
I'm one of those who peeling it.
Okay. Well, remember, you can take your whole life to peel it.
I try not to.
No, trying doesn't work. See, trying is an excuse. How many times have you heard people say, I'm going to try something? No. You either do something or you don't do it. That's what it comes down to. In this life, trying isn't worth anything. You do it or you don't?
I do.
Not yet. Because you're still believing that you could fail. As long as you believe you can fail, you haven't done it. You see, a true mind doesn't care whether they fail. I've never met anyone who was a success at life who hadn't failed 1,000 times. The difference is they didn't care. They didn't care. If you don't care about failure, and you're going to learn something from everything you do, then there's no way to be held back. But if you concern yourself with how others are going to perceive you if you fail, and then you're always going to be hesitating. You're never going to commit yourself completely to anything. And think of how many times in life you could have gone all the way and done what you really intended, really desired, really wanted, and you held back at some point because of the fear of failing, fear of disappointing others. And so that becomes a pattern of behavior. Give a try, then hold back. Give a try and hold back. Give a try and hold back. There is no benefit in trying anything. Do it or don't do it. I have more respect for people who say, Gary, I don't intend to do anything. I'm just going to be the way I am. Than people say, well, I'm going to try. And then they, ooh, 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 ooh. Yes, I might, no, won't. Yes, I might, no. Were you going to do it? Well, maybe I, maybe not. But let me talk to my analysts. I better talk to my friends. I better go have, I need some confidence building. I'm not sure if I should or not. I'll try a little bit. If it's not right, I'll pull back. Let me see. Ooh, it's new. It's cold. Not today. Tomorrow. Next year. Year and a half. Got to get my master's. Then I need a little bit more money. If I'm only in the right place. If I get this relationship problem solved, then I'll do something. Your compulsions and your addictions. Where do you want to be? Where are you? Your education, your responsibilities. We all have responsibilities. The rebel has the most responsibilities because the rebel in you is going to look at what everyone else is denied or responsible for. Rachel Carson became responsible for our entire environment. That's some heavy responsibility because all of America slept. The very same stupid, vile, disgusting human beings who supported McCarthyism, supported witch hunts, supported totalitarian fascist politicians in this country allowed her to be crucified, as they did Martin Luther King and others. They still had the courage to take that whole mantle on themselves. No one ever is more responsible, ever, than the rebel, because the rebel's responsible for the right causes. Anybody can be socially responsible. You see all these little gadflies on Park Avenue and running around and all these little charities. Ask them if they'd ever challenged where the money goes in their charity. Ask them with all these AIDS charities. You ever see anything so pathetic in your life and all this money being raised for AIDS, and yet do they spend any money on giving anyone vitamin C drips, ozone drips that could reverse the pathogenesis of AIDS, to detoxify them, to put them on a complete cellular detox? So at least the body can have a chance of rebuilding? No. On cancer, you see them going over to cancer. Go through Sloan Kettering. You'll find hundreds of people who are responsible, people who donate their time there, who consider themselves good people for helping other people. But ask them, fine, you are thinking you're helping other people. Look at the people dying. Does it occur to you that people are dying? Why don't you give your help to supporting the legalization of Wolbe enzymes? You have connections with the FDA. You're part of the power elite. Make those things that we have to go to Mexico or carnivore to Germany. Make them legal in the United States. That would be responsible. But supporting a pediatric ward where they're allowing those kids to die with chemotherapy, that's not responsible. No. You see, a lot of people think they're doing good because they don't look at the consequences of what they do. Just donating your time to a cause does not mean you've done good. Donating it to the right cause, for the right reasons, for the right purpose, that's purposefulness of responsibility. That's different. Your hobbies, your fantasies. Where do you want to be? Some people can't even fantasize. You know, in a society that is so repressed in our sexuality, not just sexual fantasies, but in all types of fantasies, we don't even allow ourselves to fantasize what we could be. Oh, you can't be that. You're black. Why can't I be? Well, because you're black. You know, you're limited. Well, I can fantasize. What? Why fantasize? You're always up against it. They even want to play with your mind. Playing with your mind. If I wouldn't have believed in fantasies, I'd be working in a shovel factory like everyone else in my family in West Virginia, in the O'Ames factory. And look at their lives. And look at them. No, there's some karmic lessons there to learn. I fantasized about coming to New York. I fantasized about being able to write. I fantasized about being able to make a difference in people's lives. But everybody I met along the way said, that's not possible. You don't have the education. You don't have the background. You don't have the connections. You know, you're a blue-collar kid out of the bean fields of West Virginia. How are you going to make a difference? I fantasized. And I believed in my fantasy. You fantasize about what you want to be. And you keep that fantasy alive. And you keep it positive. And you keep it focused, then you'll be it. But we even nurture our fantasies. Neuter our fantasies. The stuff, all the stuff that we've got, our cumulative stuff, where do we want to be with it? Do we want to get rid of a lot of the stuff in our lives? I believe we should get rid of a lot of the stuff all the time. Go home tonight and look at all the stuff you got and say, either use it, give it away, or throw it away. Clear it out so you got a chance to go forward, unburdened by all this stuff. Your adventure explorer self, why not choose an adventure? One that you haven't done and one that you'd like to do. Choose something that's really adventurous. I'm going to go over the Great Pyramids in a couple months, and I've invented a machine that I can shoot it's a magnetic laser through each block of the pyramid. You have to have a cone on one end and a receiver on the other, but it sends a signal that measures density. Now, it'll take weeks to do, but once I'm finished going every block clear across, I will have a complete diagram of everything that's inside there. And if there's any hidden chambers, this will find it. And it'll tell us whether or not we actually discovered the real secrets of the Great Pyramid. Maybe work, maybe won't work. But it's an adventure, you see? Creating the adventures of life. Making something happen. I'm off on a gold hunt down in the jungles of Ecuador. It's dangerous. People down there will kill you. And I'm fully aware of that. Oh yeah, they will. They're all corrupt. All the police and local people, they're corrupt. I don't blame them for it. That's the way they are. I mean, that's what they believe, right? It's not a moral issue for them. It's that if you have something and they want it, they kill you. I mean, but that's the way it is, right? That's the way it is in most countries, isn't it? And go down to Colombia and see if that's not the way it is. Go to Mexico. Say, I've got something you all don't have, and see how long you have it. But the idea is that we know that there's a sunken barge there, and we know it's been sunk for 200 years, and we know that there's gold on it. I'm interested in how to get it up. I don't care about the gold. I care about how to get it up and out. That's the adventure, without getting killed. Yeah. So it's a chess game. It's an adventure. I'm not suggesting you do anything that dangerous, but do something. Your communications, where do you want to be in your communications? Do you have the ideal communications? Do you say what you believe? Do you say what you feel? Can you say it with compassion? Can you say it with sensitivity? Can you challenge issues without being angry in the challenge? Can you simply challenge? That's important. And your quality time, where do you want to be with your quality time? We've got a lot of disposable time. The average American waits 6 hours and in front of a television, another two on the telephone, and probably another two at a mall. You're talking about 10 hours a day wasted. What if you did something more constructive with your time? I don't believe in wasting time. As a result, I both work and socialize, create and play, all within the day. And so there's never a waste of time. I just never sit in front of a television, just watch television, unless it's something I'm specifically watching. I don't turn on radio because I find most of it vacuous. What am I going to learn? About their anger, their prejudices? So if I do something that I create, then every day I look forward to doing something else creative. So all the time you do is quality time. It's fun to look at your whole day as being quality time. The average person, they're terrified of quality time. So they go looking for some place to put their time. I've got all these hours I don't know what to do with. Do something with, let's gossip. We'll gossip, right? I'll call you today, you'll call me tomorrow. We'll say the same things. And I'll go, oh, again? Think of all the people in America who go to each other's to have coffee. What do? They sit and they BS? About what? Think of all the wasted time. Just wasted. What if you made it quality time? I have a little dog. And every day I spend quality time with my little dog. Bonding time. I don't care what's going on in the world, it's her and my time to bond.
Dog.
And that, well, by the way, I did the same with my daughter. All right?
Which was more fun?
They're both fun. But my daughter, nothing in the world, my career, nothing came ahead of my daughter. Even when I go out on a date, I'd frequently take my daughter with me. And she was always right. She says, this is not a good woman. She was always right. Because she had that sense. Or she said someone was good, and they were. But it's really shows something when you don't allow anything to distract from what you're sharing. So in my house, if the phone rang, no one answered it. No one answered, unless it was time to answer a phone. I'd have certain time that I'd answer phone, no other time. So people know to call that time. Now, if there's any other call, so be it. Well, what if there's an emergency? So what? Yeah, but what if someone, God forbid, you know, well, God's not going to forbid anything. Right? Has nothing to do with God. But what if someone dies? Well, they're not going to come back and die again, so I can be there for them to die, right? I've never understood that whole thing. I mean, well, let's go be morbid about it. I'm not going to be morbid about anything. Quality time. Think about where you spend it, how you spend it, and watch how much more time you start having in a day if you don't waste it. Don't allow your time to be wasted. If I just want to relax and do nothing, I'll go way to the islands. Went last year, this past March, went down to Jamaica with some friends. First thing I did was I said, look at that hammock. I don't want to lay in the hammock for 9 hours. He says, Gary, tennis, no, hammock, sleep, boom. There I am, in the breeze, 9 hours. Quality time, quality time. Now they did the tennis and the swimming and, you know, the whole thing. They were exhausted. I was totally at peace. Of course, I was also rested to enjoy the rest of the night. They were asleep by 11. Okay, we've got another, what do we have, Mel? 20 minutes, okay. Now, which is more significant? Success in work, success in society, or living in peace and balance with life? Well, same thing, let's explore that. Success in work. You can be successful based upon what you're able to produce and how people acknowledge you. For instance, a head of IBM, I believe, is making $3.6 million this year in salary and earnings and benefits, right? He's laid off, 60,000 people. How realistic is it for he and another 10 individuals who are CEOs to make between $2 to $3 million each and cumulatively lay off 100,000 people whose lives were just marginal in their income production, meaning what they made at work was just able to allow them to marginally live, to pay their rent and basics. These people are making this $3 to $6 million every year. They're astronomically wealthy. Now they're considered successful. They're going to be on. They're going to be the ones who are invited to economic councils. They're the ones who are invited to talk on Nightline and in Business Week, right? And Fortune and Forbes. They're the ones profiled. They're considered success. Would you consider a person successful who's willing to take a $3.6 million bonus while at the same time cutting 60,000 jobs?
It's not the question you asked. He thinks he's successful, and he's successful in society by those standards, and therefore he's living in peace and balance with life. Hold on.
They're separate issues. Being successful in society, being successful at your work, does not mean that you've done it with peace and balance. You could or could not do it with peace and balance. How in the world can a person who fires people that they're putting out of work then profit at what those other people have not done, decision making, policy making, bad decisions, excessive debt load, and not a part of any of this? They're punishing the people who had no part in the principles of making the problem, and they're profiting from that. That cannot be done in balance. That's an imbalanced position. Therefore, socially successful, career success, yes. Interpersonal success, balance, no. You cannot be balanced and do that, because it shows that for you to succeed, you've allowed someone else to fail.
That person probably believes that's right, that he deserves it, he earned it, and those people didn't deserve it, and God made it, or it's the way of the world, or it's Darwinian, whatever it is. From his perception, all three of those things are one in his life.
That may be, but is it important what the person thinks on a conscious level or what they are on a spiritual level? Life is filled with people like Oliver North and others who thought and believed to their heart they were doing the right thing. They are shown spiritually not to have done the right thing. Think of every pilot that went over in Vietnam and bombed. Think of every pilot that was in Iraq bombing where there were children. Today, 600,000 children have died because of that incursion, because of our sanctions. Now, think of the people who have pride themselves, including Colin Powell, a man I would not trust. Think, you forget who he worked for. Did you forget who he worked for? Think. Look at the connections, at who gets where and how. If I caused the death of 600,000 children, and the man who I was supposed to be targeting is as healthy as he can be, having no loss of fat on his belly, how successful has my campaign been? The soldiers are not starving, the elite are not starving, the children are dying. I consider that a very, very stupid program. And yet everyone will sell books, they'll become national heroes, for what? What did we do? We have caused 400,000 Americans to be infected with a series of agents, from an experimental botulism to an experimental anthrax vaccine that was given. We have Gulf War syndrome. We have hurt more Americans than we would have ever hurt of the Iraqis. That's the irony. And yet the consequences of those actions are not seen because of how people have to support the wrongness of their decisions. You know, you do something stupid, you're not willing to go back and say, we did it stupid. The tobacco industry is not willing to say they did it wrong. No one's willing to admit error. So you can't wait for the person to acknowledge that what they did was wrong, even though they were successful in their minds and society's minds. We gave them a ticker tape parade. But no one went out to look to see what we did. All for what? A man who we'd traded with, a man who we'd build up, a man who all the arms that he was shooting at us in Israel, we gave him. And no one said, George Bush is head of the CIA, you were a part of that. Same way with Noriega. Isn't it interesting? We supplied him with his protection when he served the CIA's interest. So we went down there and went in there and killed about 5,000 innocent, poor, and rebellious citizens, and didn't show it in the media. Burned out their whole area. But we didn't touch the bureaucrats and the wealthy. They would have supported whoever was put in his place. More cocaine is now going through through Panama than ever before in its history. But we really cleaned up the problem, didn't we? drug problems. But success, oh yeah, they'll take credit for being successful. Nice thing about the media is they'll never go back and call you wrong. They're very myopic because they're part of the problem. See, that's the nice thing about being a rebel. You can see things for what they are. You go down and you'll report, if you're from the New York Times, about, you know, the courageous battle. Courageous. What kind of courage does it take, you know, to go in there with a bunch of guys with machetes and take in the full force of our armed forces and just annihilate whole areas so that we can protect our economic interests in the Panama Canal? No one looks at the real reason we were there. I remember George Bush on television. I saw it coming. In fact, I was at a friend's house, and I said, mark my words, tonight that will be the justification for starting a war. It's when the soldier and his wife were stopped and roughed up, and then Bush got on, we're not going to allow Americans to be roughed up. Like, oh, gee, whoa, you mean anywhere in the world where an American gets roughed up, you're going to go in there and bomb and kill all the local citizens and, you know, take over the government? Good work, George. Gee, Hitler didn't even get that far before someone criticized him. Isn't it amazing what we do that's almost a repeat of what's been done so many times before by other fascists? It's just amazing. And yet, ask people, did you see it? See what? Did you know it? Know what? Did you understand it? Understand what? Democracy, they said. What democracy? Do we have democracy? Did you have free elections? Do you have the CIA not involved in any country in the world? No. Well, then what democracy are you talking about? Well, I don't want to talk about it. You're one of those radical people, aren't you? No, I'm just a person who sees maybe the facts a little differently. Interesting what happens to your mind when you're not willing to be manipulated by public opinion. And that's what I was saying about what I don't trust. I will make my mistakes from my own conscious mind. I don't need to be manipulated by the media. That's all manipulation and extremely depraved, or from policymakers who cannot be honest, even if they wanted to be. Should you diminish the moment for what you yearn for? Think about this. This is very important. Should you diminish the moment for what you yearn for? What do you yearn for? Huh? What do you yearn for? What?
Every positive thing that I'm trying to.
A lot of positive things that you're striving for. What else?
Serenity.
Serenity. All right.
Pleasure and satisfaction.
Pleasure and satisfaction. What?
Chicken.
Chicken. You know, now, this is a fact. They are actually brothers separated at birth. You can't tell it, but I can.
Twins too.
You kind of look like a chicken, you know? I walking down the street, I saw chirping chickens, right? What's chirping? I don't say, I'm saying, I love to be fried alive. Burn my back. I don't think so. Matt, do you have a pet?
What?
No. Why not?
That's me.
Okay. Do you have a pet?
Two cats.
Two cats? I knew it. I knew it. The point is this. Whatever we have in the moment is essential. Don't give up the moment for something that you're thinking about and need down the road. If you become so preoccupied about what you want to be and what's going to be, then what you have, you're not going to respect. I don't think about what I don't have. I may desire something, I may fantasize, I may focus on it, but it's not preoccupying my thoughts. I know that in order to finally get where I'm going, it's a process. So every step of that process is essential, is vital. Every second is vital. I don't want to say, well, for the next 2 years until I have my body the way I want it, I'm not going to like my body. No, I'm going to like my body no matter what, every moment, and it's going to change. It's not as if I'm going to stop liking myself or stop respecting myself or stop honoring myself until I can be what I ideally want. And so a lot of people beat up on themselves because they're not their ideal. And that's wrong. Because we're not accepting the moment. All you've got is this moment. You don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. You don't know who's going to have a stroke in here. I saw a guy die in the park last year. In fact, he was running, and an older guy, not even an older guy. He looked older. Turned out he was only about 45, but he had gray hair, and he was overweight. And just, boom, went right down and had a heart attack. And I was just thinking, and we were just right there when it happened. And he was dead just when he hit the ground. He was dead of a massive coronary. And I went over, and they looked in his wallet to see who he was to identify. And he had a family. And turns out his family are listeners of mine. Turns out the guy was one of my listeners. But he wasn't an actualizer. Listened but didn't actualize. And I was thinking, that morning when he went out to go for his run, who would have thought that they were never going to see him alive again? Right? So what if you lived every moment as if it could be your last, every day as if it could be your last day? What would be different then about how you'd live it? Would you live it with a little more respect, attention, focus, acceptance, honor that time? You bet you would. But we're so preoccupied about getting someplace else that we forget about where we're at. And so at is where we have to be. And just keep evolving forward. So if you're really going to change to where it's necessary to identify the moment, and that's how you should be living, where you identify the moment, then there's not going to be any great transformation. It'll be a gradual transformation. You'll just wake up one day and you're just going to be a different person, but you will not have seen it coming because you will have been just evolving every day. Some people just like to wake up one day and they're all together different. Everything's changed. The fat's gone, the prejudices are gone, the fears are gone, and everything's changed, like a cloud lifts. And they'll run off and try to get someone else to help them lift this cloud off their head. But it doesn't work that way. That's why it's every day. It's like every week that you come and work out. It's each workout, each training session. You just get a little stronger. And then one day you realize, gee, I'm not running an 8-minute mile anymore. I'm running a 6-minute mile. It's only 2 months. In 2 months, I went from an 8 to a 6-minute mile. Right? That's what happened. But what if I said, all right, don't worry about anything. In 2 months, you're going to run a 6-minute mile. You say, 2 months? I can't. Not where I'm at. I think we almost fear about how much it's going to take to get where we ideally want to be. And that takes us away from the moment. So be in the moment, because that's all you've got. With 50 questions, I can see that I'm going to have enough for a couple different workshops. I'm only up to number 3. With 10 minutes to go. By changing your words, you change your actions. I love the English language. I love language. For instance, think about this. I can't. I can't. What does that do?
Limits.
Nothing.
Destroys
you. What else?
You gave up.
You gave up. You surrender. Right? But how many times have you said, I can't? The moment you say in a race you can't, that's it. I'll watch in a race to see who is saying they can't. And you'll see those people start to slow down and pull back. I'll see the people who don't say that, who just keep going. It's the same way in anything you do. The moment you say you can't, then you won't. It's just a word, right? But the word is connected to an energy. Remember, every word you say is connected to a vital, essential, intrinsic energy. The mind will follow the word as if it's real. Even if you just may have been tired, or you may have been discouraged, or you may have been disappointed. And so you say, well, I didn't really mean I could. But the mind can't differentiate. When you say, I can't, the body responds as if you can't. So you got to say, I can, I will, and believe it. And you just keep saying it over and over again. And not by half measure, full measure. I will. And you just keep doing it. In the New York Marathon, there were a bunch of people that we were running with. We started off 32 of us. How many of you in the room ran with us in that pack? One, two, three in the pack. Four in the pack. For us, five. Five of us running. We all stayed together till we, what was it, about the 16 miles when the group started to split up. And the primary reason it started to split up is some of the people began to believe at 16 that they couldn't make it. And the moment they started to say in their mind they can't make it, the body started to respond, you can't make it, because the body has a memory. The immune system has a memory. Your muscles have a memory. That's why anything that's happened earlier in life is registered in the muscles forever. That's why old feelings can come up. And by the way, good feelings too. You hear an old song, and suddenly it takes you right back to that moment when that song was important in your life. Or smell, and the same thing. So it can be good or bad. But a lot of the bad comes from the can'ts. When you were a kid and you were said you can't do it, and so you kind of gave up and you went into a defeatist position. When you're in a marathon, you say you can't, your whole body slows down. I mean, you've hit the emergency brake, and it just comes to a gridlock, and now you can't. You'll see a guy say he can't make it, within 100 feet they can't. So what we did is we pulled back, I circled around and we ran back, and we started picking up the guys and doing positive energy pushes on them, doing some chakra energy openings, taking the energy and rebalancing the energy of the chakra, rebalancing the leg, and suddenly they'd be in it again. And they finished, every one of them. There's only one person who didn't finish running with us, and that's because he went off the route, and so we didn't know where he went. But every single guy that started finished, even if we had to keep going back. And what we had to do is we had to keep changing their energy. As long as we could be positive, and I'd be one on one side, I said we'll do shoulder to shoulder, because in our training, we train them shoulder to shoulder. We'd find someone who was going slow, and we'd get beside them, we'd start running, and we'd say, all right, shoulder to shoulder, and suddenly they'd start to pick their energy up. And then I would get in front and say, just visualize me as a chariot, and horses, and you're the charioteer, and just pull the energy. And I'd say, visualize a line going from my back right into your hands, and so you're just pulling this white line, and it works. You're creating a guided visualization that's overriding their old beliefs that they can't. Physically, it's easy to show someone this. Emotionally, it happens all the time. I don't know. What happens when you say, I don't know? You frequently will give up. But what if you said, I don't know now? Means you're going to learn. So from now on, instead of saying, I don't know, say, I don't know now. Suddenly it's, but I'll know, versus I don't know, means I don't know. And that means you're a victim. I'm no expert. What does that mean?
You don't believe anything.
You're allowing someone else to tell you something that you feel that you're not going to be able to understand. What if you said, I may not be an expert, but I'm smart. Suddenly you're asking someone, look, I don't care what you know, I'm not stupid, share it, and let's see if I can understand it. Just words, but words have power. Make them work for you. So don't let anyone say because they're an expert. Experts? What experts? How smart was the banking institutions to lose almost $800 billion? Huh? Well, we used to consider bankers because they dressed so terrible, and that we used to consider them very smart, right? But they weren't smart. How smart were the cancer doctors when 600,000 are dying of cancer? How smart are the nuclear power people when they have a junkyard of billions of pounds of spent fuel rods, no place to put them, and all the consequences of low-level radiation? Everywhere I look where we have experts, I see stupidity and destruction. So I don't care what a person thinks they're an expert in, there's always something you can learn. So always keep it open. You may not be an expert, but you're willing to learn. I'm stupid. Or other people say you're stupid. Have anyone ever called you stupid? Yeah? How'd you feel? Miserable? You felt stupid, right? But you know what happens in our society? We tell people to be vulnerable, and when they're vulnerable, then we make fun of them for being vulnerable. Be honest. And then a person's honest, then we butcher them for being honest. Isn't it hypocritical? Who in our society today, except a fool, would be honest if they know that anything they say that's going to be honest is going to be used against them? So what we then do, we go out and try to entice people to secretly tape your, record your thoughts, or get a hold of something that reveals your honest feelings, and then we expose you for it. So in our society today, we are so decadent and we are so perverse that we don't even allow a person to be honest. Anyone who's honest gets crucified. So then all we get are people who lie. So then we begin to accept lying as normal, and it's not. The key is a rebel is a person who's not afraid to be honest because they're not afraid of the consequences of being honest. If I believe in what I say, I'm not afraid of who's going to say something, who's going to be offended by what I say. If I do not say something to offend, but rather saying something from the honesty of my heart, then if you're offended by it, that's not my problem, that's yours. And if I don't make it my problem, and if I don't make it your problem, I just let it be what it is, then I don't have to justify it or apologize for it. Because for decades, everyone in the health movement, everyone in the peace movement, everyone who believed in love and compassion and humanity and was against war and suffering, every one of us was made to feel guilty and apologetic for our beliefs. Were we not? You bet. Because we had no one who was in a position of power who believed in us. Because everyone who was in a position of power at the policymaking level were so damn dysfunctional. For the millennia, the most powerful person has always been the most corrupt person. They're willing to morally and ethically and spiritually hide the most important virtues of honesty and decency, and to take what is politically expedient to stay in power. So we challenge that just by the virtue of being honest, by being a vegetarian, by not eating animals, and by loving and nurturing life and respecting all cultures and all races and all backgrounds and all religions. And we were made to feel stupid, non-expert, we were disempowered, we were marginalized for it. And we actually believe we had a responsibility to feel the guilt and to prove to them that we were right, at least in our beliefs. The real rebel does not have to justify themselves. I no longer debate issues. Why? Because I no longer trust the American public in its capacity to make a judgment of what is perceived on the issues. Instead, I say, let the person educate themselves. It's time enough that we stopped all the debate between so-called experts about what the issues are. That means the public's not capable of really educating themselves, or are disinclined to educate themselves on things that fundamentally affect their lives and the quality of their lives. And until the average person becomes engaged in their own life process, they're going to just be manipulated by so-called experts who have their own agendas. Read an article I read today that was faxed to me about how much of science today is commercialized. Well, how honest can science be if it's all commercialized? Then it's all for someone's profit. And politics has always been for someone's profit. So when politics, religion, institutions, and education are so politicized and so economically bound today, then where are we getting the honesty to direct us? And then you see why I can't put my faith any longer in any institution out there. So I live as a rebel with a cause. And the cause is the decency of my own life manifesting in goodness and service. And for all of you who also have done the same, and many of you I know have done the same, then there's never a shortage or a limitation of good people to share that energy with. That's it for tonight.
Again, let's get together on Sunday, August 22nd, noon, for a very comprehensive webinar on how to survive COVID, all your questions answered, plus how to have a healthier, happier, and more joyful life. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying.